Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. They're coming to you from the sunny city of Los Angeles, California. Hope you're having a great day. You ready to have a great next 3 hours? Bruce Gradkowski is going to join us, quarterback, National Football League, 11 years in the biz. We'll get his sense of, once upon a time, he's a Cleveland Browns starting quarterback. I'm going to ask him about Baker Mayfield. Mike McGlinchey is going to join us, 49ers dominant offensive lineman. We'll ask him about what it's like to try and perform with these expectations. And Jimmy G, what's he like to play with? Mark Schlereth is going to join us. Tillman Fertitta, of course, a business mogul who is the owner of the Houston Rockets, has a new book out. He's going to join us. And R.J. Bell will join us. Okay, of course, R.J., not only pregame.com, but also you can hear him on Straight Out of Vegas, which is a show that follows ours here on Fox Sports Radio. And, of course, R.J. will give us the latest in terms of the money and where it's looking tonight and how we evaluate Tennessee, Jacksonville, as the Titans are a 1.5-point favorite against the Jaguars. But let's start with parenting, shall we? We welcome back John Ramos into the house. Ramos was gone for the better part of 6 months on paternity leave.
That's 6.5, Doug.
6.5 months. Actually, 6.5 weeks. But if you've raised children, you know what I'm saying to be true. If you haven't, you might be intrigued to hear this. If I were to ask people who don't have kids or have little babies, what's the hardest age to raise little children? They would almost all say, I'm guessing 2, right? They call it the terrible twos for a reason. Right? When they're a baby, and Ramos has this beautiful little baby boy, Noah, they don't do much. Right? They don't. And do you love the baby? Like, yeah, you love the baby. The baby's cute and it coos. Some cry more than others. Some have more hair than others. But they're all generally adorable. Right? They sleep most of the day. They don't do much. They start to develop a little bit of a personality. And depending on if they're boy or girl, and depending, you know, like early walkers or late talkers, late talkers or early walkers. So the first year, you know, you're just trying to get it to where you can get them to sleep through the night. When they're a year old, they start to do some stuff. They start to walk around. They start to toddle around. No, while no one would say that's easy, outside of having a colicky baby, which we've had, it's not the hardest, because you give them a pass because they're babies. Right? They're not, nothing that they're doing is intentional. Nothing that they're doing is because you have any expectations for them. They're just babies. And matter of fact, even the sleeping through the night thing, that's more a you thing than a them thing. Right? When your first child, you're so deathly afraid of something happening to them that you're constantly going in and checking on them and waking them up when, or, you know, anytime they cry, you come in and help them. They have to learn to self-soothe. First year's a wash. First 2 years a wash. But the terrible twos is what most people would say is the toughest age to raise a child. That's when they throw fits. That's when they have a personality. That's when they learn the word no. The same is true with having a quarterback. What's the toughest year to have a quarterback? Well, the rookie year, right? Everybody moves faster. Everything is more, or the defenses are more ornate. The players are all better. The level of competition is such a dramatic jump from college to pros. Your rookie year, you're inexperienced. You haven't played in a real pro offense. You haven't prepared for all these different schemes. You're still a boy. You're playing against men. If you were to ask somebody on the outside of the NFL, what's the hardest year to have a quarterback? They'd say rookie year. If you ask somebody who hasn't had kids, what's the hardest year to raise children? They'd say terrible twos. Well, in the NFL, I would actually point out that I think the second year is harder. Here's why. Between the first year and the second year, now you're not on the media tour. It's not all about hope. Now there's raised expectations. You got a little experience. You've earned the right to be a starter. You're the face of a franchise. And instead of simply running the plays that you're given the entirety of the playbook and the chance to work within the scope of the offense and occasionally change a play or two. You're not supposed to see half the field. You're supposed to see the whole field. And the challenge is, and why it's more difficult in that second year, is you're given more responsibility, and yet you don't really have experience. And, oh yeah, by the way, the rest of the league has started to develop a book on you. What you do well, what you do poorly. They know who you are. They know your tendencies. And, oh yeah, by the way, you still are really, really inexperienced. No one signifies that more than Baker Mayfield. Right? Last year, he was the number one overall pick. He didn't start the season right away. The Browns got off to a disappointing season. He takes over, and suddenly they move to 7-8-1, and people act like he's the savior. Last year, when he made mistakes and errors which caused them to not make the playoffs and had successes against the bottom of the league, we gave him a pass. Why? He's a rookie quarterback. Ah, he was a walk-on. Sure, he won the Heisman Trophy. Sure, he's the number one overall pick, but he's a former walk-on. He's only a rookie. And the Browns won one game combined in two previous years. Any sort of success should be fawned over. But now, here he is two games in, and we've pointed out, leads the league in interceptions since week 8 of last season. Now, you get the sense he's having a disappointing year. They're 1-1 on the year. They get the Rams coming in this Sunday night. And because of the lofty expectations, maybe it's because of the attention that he's drawn, the commercials that he's filmed, because he was the number one overall pick, but because he's in his second year and he's supposed to be experienced. Truth is, he hasn't started an entire season yet. He has not even, if you combine the 2 years, he hasn't started 16 games. Hasn't played a playoff game. Has an inexperienced head coach. Odell Beckham Jr. has only played 2 games in a Browns uniform. It's different style, different scheme, different personnel. We're asking of him to carry a franchise which hasn't been successful, really, since they came to be as an expansion franchise. But it's only because he's in his second year. Ask somebody who has kids. What's harder, when they're terrible twos or when they're three? When they're in the terrible twos, they may throw a fit, but they're still sleeping in a crib. They still have diapers or maybe pull-ups. There's still a safety barrier for them. There's still a net underneath them. Once they get to three, now they're in big girl panties or big boy underwear. There is no safety net when they make a mess. They're no longer in their crib. They're in a big boy or big girl bed. And your expectations of them are raised because you're not two anymore. You're three. You're going to preschool. You're a big boy. You're a big girl. They're still only three. They've been on this earth for 3 years. They don't really have the tools yet to manage their anger, their frustration, their growing sort of insecurities that they don't know are insecurities. They're still needy because they do in fact need you. Just like quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield doesn't know everything. He hasn't seen everything. This was NFL insider Charles Robinson yesterday on the show.
It's funny to me that there's not more talk about Baker Mayfield being a turnover machine, because he has. He's been a turnover machine. And if you go back, I want to say the line of demarcation is when Freddie Kitchens took over that offense. Baker Mayfield leads the NFL in turnovers, and yet no one's really brought that up. When you go back to the success of Cleveland last year, when they really had things rolling, they were really running. They were a running team. They ran the football really, really well. And I think this year there's been this sort of design dynamic of we have OBJ, we have Jarvis Landry, we have, you know, the tight end, we have all these guys. Now we got to throw the ball and become more of a slinging team, when I still think they're probably at their best when it's balanced and Nick Chubb's running the ball well.
No question. I mean, they've been inept on third down, most important down in the National Football League, and they've turned the football over, which is what you can't do if you want to win games. I'm not giving Baker a total pass. I told you Tuesday, after watching him Monday night, he's not playing well. But I'm simply pointing out he's trying to raise up a franchise which has been in despair. He's being coached by somebody who's wildly, maybe unprepared for all that he's taking on. The franchise went out and added great skill position players, which, by the way, has never really been the root of success in the NFL. And the expectations are so high, they're almost untenable. And because he's the three-year-old, not the two-year-old, we have unrealistic expectations of his performance when this is more the norm than the exception.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Nothing about Antonio Brown stories are really fun anymore, right? 0 days without an Antonio Brown story. I mean, it's really, really crazy. Go back and look, and there's something every day for the last month. So here's this. Antonio Brown is not a Nike athlete. This from a Nike spokesperson, told the Boston Globe. Per a source with knowledge close to the situation, the wheels were in motion to terminate the relationship with Antonio Brown before last week's civil lawsuit accusing Brown of sexual assault. There were concerns about Brown fulfilling his duties under the agreement. The lawsuit was filed, obviously, by Brittany Taylor. She met with the league. The lawsuit makes references to Brown having a trouble balancing relationships he had arising out of his many endorsement deals. Campbell Soup, Nike, Pepsi, Pizza Hut, AT&T, DirecTV, Rite Aid, among others. Via the Boston Globe, Brown's deal with Pepsi ended earlier this year. His relationship with Pizza Hut and Campbell Soup expired earlier this year. Zenith, that's not that old TV. Do you guys remember there used to be Zenith TVs? You're old enough to remember like Zenith TVs. Yeah, that's back when the TVs were deep and you pick them up and you'd get a hernia. Anyway, Zenith makes the new helmets. They ended their relationship. So now Nike's like, look, we stuck by Kobe. We stuck by Tiger. We're not going to stick by you. Now, do I think part of it is, you know, violence against women is not tolerated? And by the way, none of this is criminal. There's no criminal charges pending against him, in fairness to Antonio Brown. Part of it is like there just haven't been any good stories. Like there hasn't been anybody go like, hey, you know, I know there's these stories, but Antonio Brown is an awesome human being. Not one. And there's the reality that Antonio Brown doesn't move product. Has anyone watched Antonio Brown play and go like, hey, you know, I think he's wearing Nikes. I'm going to go out and get a pair of those. Like NFL players don't really move things unless they're in TV commercials, and he's not in Nike commercials that I can remember. Odell Beckham Jr. would be the one kind of wide receiver you think could move the needle. But the fact that Nike is bailing on him should tell you how bad this is. Do I think part of it is what value he brings in return as opposed to the negative that comes with associating your brand with him? Sure. But I think a good portion of it is how many stories like this can we hear before you're like, you know, I got it. I understand. This Brittany Taylor thing could be, who knows what's real, what's not real. But you got enough people saying you don't pay your bills. You got enough people saying you're not the greatest dude in the world. You got enough teams not wanting to have you be part of their roster. I feel like it's Mark Cuban, right? Mark Cuban goes, and because of that, I'm out. And no. I'm out.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Bruce Gradkowski, longtime quarterback in the National Football League, joins us. Spent 11 years playing quarterback in the league. Look, you played for a bunch of teams. Played for the Steelers most recently. And Antonio Brown has been obviously in the news a ton. Nike said thanks, but no thanks. He's no longer associated with us. Well, what's your Antonio Brown experience like?
You know, I played with AB for a few years. And I'll tell you what, he was one of the hardest workers I've ever been around and I've ever witnessed at practice. his personality is very attracting. Like, he's a good guy. He seems to come off like he means well. But there's times, too, that you get a little frustrated, you know, when he shows up late for practice or he's late for meetings and so forth like that. So there's just a little too much, you know, sideshow that goes on with it that I think, you know, the Steelers got a little tired of it. And, of course, you know, Oakland didn't want to put up with it as they saw early on. But, man, he's a talent on the field. And like I said, and he works his tail off. I mean, that's why he's in the position he's in, or one of the best receivers, because he puts in that type of work.
You know, Bruce, I did the NBA draft for 10 years. 10 years when I was ESPN. And we still do it now when we have college kids on getting ready for the draft, or guys early in their career. And sometimes we say it to them, and sometimes we just think it, like, man, I hope 5-10 years in, you can be this same guy, right? You can be the same kind of humble, hungry, athlete that understands how hard it was to get to where you started to here, and understand all that you've earned, but some of which you've been given. Is it possible that he's just changed? He's crossed over into, you know, that realm where you kind of don't recognize the guy because of the trappings of fame, money, and attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, I think all of us, you know, you grow throughout your life, and it's how people treat you and what you've been, you know, what you've earned, but also what you're given at a certain point that, you know, it comes to you now. And he's at a point where he's at superstar status. I mean, he's not just a superstar football player. I mean, he's a celebrity now. Like, he's known, you know, he was on Dancing with the Stars. So, you know, you're just known more than football. So when you get to that point, too, that you have people pulling you in so many different directions, and honestly, it's really hard to stay that, you know, humble self, but the person you were when you came out, because we all live and learn. We all change. And I know, even just speaking from experience myself, you know, playing 11 years in the National Football League, and, you know, probably doing things now that I wouldn't do, or I don't do now that I would have done when I was, you know, first out in the NFL. So I think we all change and grow for good and bad. And it's trying to always keep that perspective, though, of what got you to where you're at.
Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Bruce Gradkowski joins us. He's an analyst for Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at BGradkowski5. My personal non-football expert opinion has been that I don't think Baker Mayfield's played that well yet. It's only two games in. But, you know, having watched, I believe every snap he played at Texas Tech and at Oklahoma, some of the flaws in Baker Mayfield, especially early in his career, seem to have reappeared. And those were, like, I think he's a really smart, really good football player. I don't think he has the arm that people think he has. And sometimes, you know, his ego will tell him he can force some plays that he just can't force. Is that what led to some of these turnovers?
Well, I think, you know, I think he definitely has the arm talent. I mean, he can make every throw. He can, you know, his rhythm and footwork, it could continue to get better and be better. But what happens, too, sometimes is when you have some success, or when you're on a team and you're the quarterback, you just try to do more. But right now, I also feel like the Titans defense and the Jets defense did a really good job at mixing up coverages. And we still have to remember, Baker's still young in his career. This is only his second year. Really, he's only been starting 10 games, you know. So, I mean, he hasn't seen everything. He hasn't seen every blitz or defense yet. So defenses are changing things up. So they're giving him one coverage before the ball is snapped, and then at the snap of the ball, they change it to a different coverage. And a lot of times as a quarterback, that's difficult because then your read changes. And that's what's keeping Baker holding on to the football a little bit too long, clutching the ball in the pocket, and taking those unnecessary sacks. You know, a few of those are on Baker. And you know, some are on the offensive line. Some are the coverage downfield, or receivers not being open. And Baker can't force it because he'll throw an interception. So then all of a sudden, a D lineman's at his feet and he's taking a sack. So everything plays in together. But if I'm Freddie Kitchens right now, I try to see how I not simplify the offense, but call more plays that can have Baker just playing more decisive and dropping back and going through his progressions and his reads without having to think or read too much. And I think just until you get him back in a nice little rhythm, because defenses are going to do what they, you know, the Jets did and the Titans did, and just continue to move up and mix coverages on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually started the show saying that, how we have unrealistic expectations for a guy who's only started 10 games because he's not a rookie. Like, when you're a rookie and you make a mistake, you're like, you're a rookie. But now you're in your second year, like, well, he's a second-year starter. He should know better. You know, he's got Odell. He's got Jarvis. You know, it's his team. Like, yeah, but he's in year two and really not even through year one, having not seen the entire league yet.
Yeah, and it's just how Baker carries himself. You know, he carries himself like a 10-year veteran. So then we treat him that way too. But yeah, you're right. We have to remember too, he's still very young in his career. He has a lot more growing to do, and he will grow. And that's why it was good that the Browns were able to get away out of New York with a win and kind of regroup. And you know, they have some tough games ahead, especially with the Rams coming up. But I think Mayfield has it all. He has the arm. He has the personality to be the leader in the locker room and be a good influence on the team and to get the job done. Now it's just, look, now we're talking about football stuff, things that teams talk about week in and week out. How do we get better on third down? How do we convert in the red zone instead of settling for field goals? And those are good, normal conversations to try to figure out how you could continue to get better as a football team.
Bruce Gradkowski joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Kind of hard to figure out, is Lamar this good, or is it two bad teams and a scheme that people haven't really gotten a chance to see or figure out yet?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think Lamar is executing it perfectly. He's making good decisions from the neck up. Defenses, though, you have to try to decide, how are you going to play this guy? Are you going to stack the box and not let them beat you with the run and force Lamar Jackson to make plays with his arm? Well, now he's doing that. The last 2 weeks, yeah, they're not the best defenses in the league, but he's still executing. He's still putting the ball where it's supposed to go. He's still making good decisions. And those are the types of things I see. I mean, it's just a play where Lamar has, a 2x2 set, and he has a quick out to one side, and the corner sits on the slot receiver's quick out, so the outside receiver's running a go, and it was Mark Ingram, and he fit the ball right in there in the cover two hole on the sideline. And those are the things he's seeing, which is good, and making the right decision.
What about Jared Goff? He signed, obviously, a huge contract, biggest one we've seen, and they're 2-0. They weren't great against Carolina. I think some of it is they don't play their guys in the preseason. When you watch him on tape, when you break him down, what's your assessment of Jared Goff?
I mean, I think the guy continues to get better. And look, I think this time of year especially, if you can win early, it's just going to help. Because, you know, until you figure out the type of team you are, until you get back in the groove, it's always to get these wins early on in the season under your belt, and that's what the Rams are doing. So I think him and McVay continue to work together, get into that rhythm, because Goff has it. He's able to do it all. He's a smart quarterback. He's getting coached very well, and he can make all the throws. The thing that I was impressed with Goff last year was just the way he extends plays, and you don't think of that when you think of Jared Goff, but it's just as far as just in the pocket, holding on the ball a little long enough to let your receivers win or to get to that third option on third and eight to get the first down. So I'm not worried about Goff. I saw he dropped some very nice passes last week on the deep ball, and that one over the middle that was dropped right over the linebacker. But he's got the arm strength. He's got the touch on the football. But it'll be a tough game this weekend going into Cleveland.
Green Bay Packers have a new offense. There was a little verbal back and forth between Aaron Rodgers and his coach. I think that's how guys roll. That's not the hugest deal in the world. When you see the offense, is it discernibly different and better than what they were running previously under Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, I think with Mike McCarthy, it was a little more spread out. Rodgers in the shotgun. And now Green Bay is trying to establish a run, get Rodgers under center, a little play action pass, try to get him easier completions and throws and get some chunks downfield. And I just think they continue, you know, to work together. And the offense will click even more so than we're seeing it right now. So same thing with Green Bay. Able to just win football games early on in the season until you really get in a groove as an offense because your defense is playing well. So I just see that offense on the uprising just going to continue to get better.
Did Eli Manning deserve to be benched?
You know, I mean, is that the right question now or was that the right question 2 years ago? You know, like, so I think it's time. I think especially you draft Daniel Jones, where you drafted him. I think Eli has brought some great years to New York, some Super Bowl championships. He's had some unbelievable moments. But now it's time. I mean, it's time for the Giants to figure out what they have in the future. Is it Daniel Jones? The organization, they have to figure this out. They were very fortunate enough to have a franchise quarterback for as long as they did, and now it's time for them to figure out what the next step is. And, hey, hopefully it's Daniel Jones. They drafted him so early, but they're going to get to see it now with all the reps he gets, and it's just going to make him that much better and comfortable in that offense.
Bruce Gradkowski, longtime vet in the NFL. Check out his work at BGradkowski5 or on Pro Football Focus, where they do an amazing job over there. Bruce, thanks so much for joining us, giving us your perspective, man.
Yeah, thanks, brother. Have a good week.
You too. Bruce Gradkowski joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Our next guest has been winning in life and winning in business for years, part of a wildly successful family. And his big ticket purchase a couple years ago, year and a half ago, was the Houston Rockets. He also has a new book out. It's called Shut Up and Listen, Hard Business Truths That Will Help You Succeed. He's Tillman Fertitta. He also happens to own the Houston Rockets. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Tillman, how are you?
Great, Doug. And you're right. You better win if you want to have butts in the seats. And you can go from very profitable to not real profitable real quick.
Okay, so what is the truth to owning an NBA team, right? Because in order for you to buy the team, you had to do a deep dive into the finances of it. On a day-to-day basis, are you making money if you're owning an NBA team?
The majority of NBA teams, and I don't know the exact numbers, and you can look at them in Forbes, and it kind of gives you the operating EBITDA, you know, make decent money. But most teams are successful, and there's a lot of winning teams. You know, it's funny what you're saying. When the Rockets went up for sale on July 17th a few years ago, and the talk was around $2 billion for them, if not more, everybody that came in and was doing due diligence was trying to make the numbers work. Well, first off, you can't borrow more than $300 million on an NBA team, just like you can't the NFL either, because they don't want heavy leverage on the team. So while everybody else was trying to figure out how do they do this, I realized that a team's going to make, you know, if it's an unbelievable and everything's great and you win the championship, you're going to probably make $100 million. Should be mildly successful, you should make around $50 million, and so it's somewhere in between. And if you start losing, you're going to make a lot less. And so I did know this, though. There had never been a major league sports team sell for less.
Right.
And remember, I almost bought the team 25 years ago, and I lost out at $80 million. So 25 years later, I paid $2.2 billion. And they are going to continue to go up, and at the same time, you can't get caught up exactly what they're making today.
Yeah,
you got to have a long-term horizon.
I mean, it's the valuations are crazy, and I know you've seen so many others. It's like, reminds you of real estate, right? Like, I always want to buy this house. It sold for $500,000, you know, when the market was down. Now it's like 125. You're like, well, this is crazy. It's the exact same house. Nobody's even done anything to it. Obviously, it's... That's a hell of a check to write. Like, what is that? What is it like to write that check? Because I picture there's two possibilities there. I just wonder what the feeling is like if you can only borrow $300 million and you got to write a $2.5 billion check. What is it like to make that final purchase?
Well, it's really difficult, and this is the problem in major sports today is that the numbers are so big. Like, let me give you an example. In 1982, the Rockets sold for $10 million. And I was a minority partner. I was like 25 years old, but I was already successful. And I invested a couple of $100,000. And I owned a few percent of the team. Well, the problem is today, for a minority partner, on a $2 billion purchase, 5% would still be $100 million. Well, like somebody who's going to buy 5%, it's no longer about the percentage you own. It's if I'm going to invest $100 million, I better have a seat at the table. And so that's the problem now, is that the numbers have gotten so big. That's why I think it's going to really separate who's going to buy these teams and who isn't going to buy these teams.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
But it was real dollars. And to tell you how I did it, I happened to have a very, very successful company. People weren't sitting around with a $1 billion in cash. Okay. Right. They just don't do it. And I had equity in my company and I owned 100% of it. And so I was able to go out and borrow the money on my other company and take a dividend out of my company of $1.7 billion. And then I put in the rest and use the rest on which you can borrow on the team. But it's not easy to do today. And that's like when the Carolina Panthers came up. It took them 6 to 8 months to get to that 2223 number.
So you just raise the price of apps at all your restaurants, and then that all eventually it all makes up that $1.7 billion. Is that the plan?
I wish I could do that. I wish it was that easy. But your customer is way too smart. You know, we're having to raise them just to keep up with minimum wage increases right now.
You know, it is fascinating on how you were able to make it. The restaurant business is one. Like, people talk about professional sports, and you point out none of them ever sell for less than they sold for previously. That's not the case with restaurants. Like, restaurants, what is it, 70-80% of them go under. And I know your new book is about being successful in business. What has been the secret to building so many? It's not like you just own one. It's a bunch of them. What's the secret there to being the guy or one of the few guys that's able to survive and consistently succeed in such a very difficult business?
Let me ask you this. What city are you in?
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Okay. So I try to go where the people are, okay, number one, where there's tourism business, convention business, business people, everything, and then systems and controls. So here's a prime example. You're in L.A., so I have the Mastros in Malibu. I have the Mastros in Beverly Hills.
No. The one down in Newport. The best one's the one down in Newport. I mean, that's the...
A lot of people say that. Yes. You know, a lot of people that story. So basically, it's location, location, location,
right.
And then you've got to have the brand and the system, and then it takes a village to make one successful, and you got to have your marketing right, you got to have your operations right. It really takes everything to make one successful, and believe me, I don't have the perfect golden touch. I've had a lot of my own mistakes, and closed quite a few myself as we've opened them over the years.
Okay, but wait. Master is a perfect example, though, right? So you have Fleming's, you have Ruth's Chris, you have like steak. There's a lot of different high-end steakhouse. And yet Mastro's has become synonymous with, like, if you get on payday, your date night, like where I live, we have all these options. And yet Mastro's, the one down in Crystal Cove, to me is like the best spot. It's got a cool little piano bar. Like how did that brand separate itself in a very difficult high-end steakhouse market?
And you're right, because I also own the Martin's brand and the Strip House brand of high-end. And we just do it so well at Mastro's, and we buy the absolute greatest products you can buy, but yet we created an atmosphere with these huge bars, and we pay the live entertainment that's very expensive. So it's creating a feeling. It's creating an atmosphere. and at the same time having an extremely great location with an extremely well-trained staff and great food, of course.
Tillman Fertitta joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so we talked about wins. Let's talk about losses. Obviously, you're upset when you guys lost at home Game 6 to the Warriors. But, like, I'm wondering, were you more upset that you lost, or was it because not only did you lose, but you lost to the Warriors without Durant? And so there was this in, I mean, I think maybe you walk in the arena that night thinking, this is what the Warriors are going to be like from this year on, and if we still can't beat them, that's why we need to make changes. Give me your sense of why you were upset. You're a competitor, but to lose, what was the impetus behind you being so upset after that loss?
Well, I mean, I think, my whole basketball operations, the fans, James Harden, Chris Paul, we were all upset. I mean, going back to Golden State and losing in seven games is one thing, but we shouldn't have blown a 9-point lead at home in the sixth game. And everybody will tell you that. And I think everybody was just as upset as I was. And, you know, there's bad losses and then there's bad losses, just like there's good wins and then there's really good wins. And that was a really bad loss for the organization. It disappointed all of us. And, you know, we just said, we're going to do whatever it takes to get better again this year. And it's no different than the way I treat, you know, my business with all my casinos and amusement parks and restaurants and whatever, is that we want to be the best, and we're going to make adjustments every year to see what we can do to get better.
So, obviously, the coaching staff has been changed, but the biggest change was trading Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. What was your level of involvement in that process?
Well, it, you know, first off, it sure wasn't my idea. You know, it just kind of happened when the Paul George trade happened. And then all of a sudden, I think Oklahoma, and I'm not speaking for them, decided that they weren't going to win a championship this year. So we're going to maybe do some other things. And, you know, I don't know who contacted who first, but my basketball people, you know, drilled down and made a case to me, and I know what I know, and I know what I don't know, and I asked them hard questions, and they had good answers, and they showed me how Westbrook is the greatest transition player to ever play the game, and so now you've got a guy that's one of the greatest shooters of all time, and a guy that's also one of the greatest, if not the greatest, transition player of all time. And I think they go back a long way in L.A., and they know each other. They've played together. They've known each other since they were kids. And I think that you're going to see an interesting team this year. But the whole West is going to be great this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's so many good teams.
What happens if they don't win? If it doesn't work, what happens?
Well, we're going to have to make adjustments again. But I'm feeling pretty darn good about it. And you got to be optimistic. And if it doesn't work, which I don't think is going to be the issue, we'll sit down and try to figure out what we need to do to be better.
All right. Well, listen, Tillman, this book looks fantastic. Shut Up and Listen. Hard business truths that will help you succeed. Who would know more about succeeding in the business world than you and your family? Thank you so much for your time. And best of luck, not just in this upcoming season, but with all that you're doing. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
All right. It's Tillman Fertitta joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.